They make them as to God, from whom comes all counsel, wisdom, and understanding. We humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. May we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen.
Meeting of Parliament, Friday the 16th of March 2019, order proceedings. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 14th, 16th, and 23rd of February 2019.
I find the minutes of correct. The Ombudsman's annual report for the year. Oh, the statement. Sorry, I thought I had to lay on the table first. Mr. Speaker, last Thursday, the 8th of March, the Deputy Speaker and I attended the sixth session of the UK Gibraltar Joint Ministerial Council, the Gibraltar EU Negotiations Council, which is an amongst governments of the United Kingdom and Gibraltar, and our exit from the European Union. The JMC is the process which the United Kingdom has established to deal with different relevant administrations in respect of the implementation of the decision to leave the European Union. This sixth meeting is the final meeting ahead of the March European Council meeting. The meeting was chaired by the Parliamentary Undersecretary of State for Exiting the European Union, the Honourable Robin Walker. And during the course of the JMC meeting and in culmination of the work leading up to it, we agreed the series of measures that will ensure that the valued and historic links between the United Kingdom and Gibraltar grow, deepen, and endure. As a result, Mr. Speaker, the United Kingdom has now guaranteed Gibraltar Financial Services firm access to UK markets as now until 2020. This vote is important because it is the date being presently set by the EU Commission as the date on which the implementation or transitional period being sought by the United Kingdom will end. As a result of the invidious inclusion by Spain of Clause 24 of the European Negotiating Guidelines, some uncertainty has arisen as to the position of the UK and Gibraltar in respect of the application of the withdrawal, transition, and future arrangements to Gibraltar. The government of Gibraltar has already made clear that we consider and are advised that that Clause 24 of the Negotiating Guidelines is contrary to European Union law. The United Kingdom has made clear and is insistent in stating that it is negotiating for the whole of the member state of the United Kingdom, including Gibraltar. Nonetheless, in order to derive some benefit, those who might relish the existence of such uncertainty as a result of the potential exercise of the illegal Spanish veto, the maximum governments of the United Kingdom and of Gibraltar have now made a statement that clarifies and puts beyond doubt that the existing market access arrangements between us would not be affected by the exclusion of Gibraltar from any such transitional period. Of course, that is not the end of access. The United Kingdom has already, and I repeat, Mr. Speaker, already committed itself to the maintenance and, where possible, the enhancement of market access for financial services from Gibraltar. Indeed, for services from Gibraltar, but that obviously includes financial services. Indeed, in January of this year, the Secretary of State himself, the Right Honourable David Davis, made the position of the United Kingdom abundantly clear in terms which cannot be misinterpreted. In his letter to the House of Lords European Union Committee, he said the following: HMG and GOG intend to pursue a close economic partnership underpinned by shared high standards of regulation. It is the unthinkable objective of the United Kingdom government to ensure the seamless continuation of existing market access into the UK and enhance it where possible. Mr. Speaker, that is not a base limited commitment. And it is just the latest iteration of that commitment to continue to allow market access to the UK after we have left the EU single market. I'm not going to repeat each of the times that this wording has been employed by UK ministers, starting with Secretary of State Liam Fox during the events of Gibraltar in London in October 2016. So I'm able to confirm to the House, as I have already said, that the United Kingdom market will remain open to Gibraltar and financial services even after 2020. No one should be in any legitimate doubt about that. What we are seeking to do, and this is the mechanism, not the principle, is to ensure that we create mutual confidence in and cooperation on regulatory and supervisory structures for the period beyond 2020. But the statement last week is about 2020, and so far it creates that immediate cushion to ensure that our potential illegal and nonsensical exclusion from the transitional period would have no effect as between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom. It does not operate as a limit in any way on the very clear and unequivocal, open-ended commitment given by Her Majesty's Government of the United Kingdom to maintain, that is to say, and enhance, that is to say, improve market access where possible. It is as a result of this that the United Kingdom Government will work closely with the Government of Gibraltar to design a replacement framework to endure beyond 2020 based on the shared high standards of regulation and enforcement of this regulation and underpinned by modern arrangements for information sharing, transparency, and regulatory cooperation. Mr. Speaker, how will we do that? Well, we intend to carry out an outcomes review to ensure that regulatory outcomes in Gibraltar from the United Kingdom are aligned and designed to ensure consumer protection above all else. And the Gibraltar order, made under the Financial Services and Markets Act, will be recast and redesigned to ensure it is modernized and adapted into a bespoke piece of UK legislation that will create the gateway that fits into the UK under the new bilateral arrangement. A Gibraltar team has already drafted this in Gibraltar, and consideration of this is in train, and part of the UK's general legislation being prepared by Her Majesty's Treasury legal team. I can hear one of the devils just next to me, so he's already working hard on the order. This is better than excellent progress at this stage in the game, Mr. Speaker, when operators in other jurisdictions do not have any certainty or clarity of what access they may have into the UK market and services. This is particularly relevant in the sector also of services in the online gaming industry. Mr. Speaker, Gibraltar is the only jurisdiction to have the benefit of a firm UK commitment on continued market access after we leave the European Union. Specifically, the UK has provided assurances that gambling operators based in Gibraltar will continue to access the UK market after we leave the EU in the same way as they do now. This is an important advantage for Gibraltar, as no other EU jurisdiction at all can boast such a clear and unequivocal statement of continued market access for services. Additionally, we are working towards agreement of an MOU which will enable closer working and collaboration between gambling regulators in Gibraltar and the UK. Further, Mr. Speaker, and moving on to other areas, the UK is providing assurances to the government of Gibraltar that following EU exit, British citizens residing in Gibraltar will continue to be eligible for higher educational home fee status at English institutions, both during the implementation period and afterwards, subject to concluding a reciprocal agreement for UK students studying at higher education institutions in Gibraltar. Mr. Speaker, honourable members should note that higher education is an area of devolution and that therefore the UK government is not able to enter into arrangements for the devolved administration. That is why this commitment is expressed as being for England only. We are already pursuing the matter also with the other devolved administrations. So just to give the House a flavour of what has been agreed, there are 867 undergraduate and postgraduate students from Gibraltar in England. To help the house to understand the value of what was agreed in the joint EU last week, the average yield taken is for home and EU undergraduate students undertaking standard courses at English universities is £9,250. The average yield taken is for overseas students undertaking standard undergraduate courses at English universities is £13,463. The average yearly tuition fee for home students undertaking postgraduate courses at English universities is £9,974. The average yearly tuition fee for overseas students undertaking postgraduate courses at English universities is £16,100. The difference between the overseas undergraduate fee and the home undergraduate fee is £5,213, where the difference between the overseas postgraduate fee and the home postgraduate fee is £6,126. In order to calculate the difference in value between our students in care and overseas fee or home fees, we have relied on the undergraduate calculations only, which are the predominant ones involved, which amount to a total saving of £4.5 million. £4,519,671. Mr. Speaker, for the information of honourable members, there are at the moment 180 Gibraltar scholarship students in Welsh universities and 15 in Scottish universities. There is one student studying in Northern Ireland. Mr. Speaker, we have also agreed that the United Kingdom is committed to work closely with the government of Gibraltar towards transfer arrangements post-EU exit that support Gibraltar's prosperity. The UK will also maintain the current reciprocal healthcare arrangements between the UK and Gibraltar. This means that Gibraltar can continue to refer an unlimited number of their patients to the UK for free elective treatment. The UK remains committed to fully involving Gibraltar as we leave the European Union, and we will continue to work together through the journey to focus on ensure we take account entirely of Gibraltar's priorities in the context of the United Kingdom's negotiations with the EU. Additionally, the United Kingdom and Gibraltar have agreed to recognise the importance of enhancing our arrogance and all of the environmental and fisheries implications of EU exit that are relevant to Gibraltar, whether by sharing information as openly as possible, by providing specialist expertise across a range of policy areas to support Gibraltar with its own preparation, or by considering with Gibraltar where our interests might be promoted in future through regional or international arrangements. This announcement and the benefits it brings is a fruit of hard work. The Brexit team I lead has worked front out for these past 18 months. There is a lot still to do. The Deputy Chief Minister has been fully engaged in these matters together with the Minister of Financial Services and Gaming. All other ministers are providing detailed input in respect of the areas of responsibility on which their input is required. The Attorney General is part of that team and is leading on the European aspects of the legal work. The Financial Secretary is dealing with matters that relate to his area of expertise. This work, Mr. Speaker, is therefore the work product of an administration that has got its teeth into Brexit, although it was not the gift we chose from the menu presented to us. Finally, Mr. Speaker, it would be remiss of me not to also thank the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, the Foreign Secretary, and the Secretary of State for leaving the European Union for their support in delivering this enduring capital measures. I must also thank the Gibraltar team of officials in the Foreign Office and in the Department for exiting the European Union for their work in delivering these measures. We are working honestly, openly and closely together to deliver results that work for the people of the United Kingdom and the people of Gibraltar. We will continue to do so successfully as we finalise the process of our departure from the European Union.
The Honourable the Leader of the Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, whilst we broadly welcome this announcement by the government as an interim package of measures that have been negotiated with the government, and we note the Chief Minister's comments in relation to the open-ended mechanism in order to maintain and further enhance our access to specific markets. We also welcome the commitments in relation to gaming, health, and particularly in education, but of course, education, every government is always committed to the payment of tuition fees and maintenance grants for our students in the United Kingdom. What I say about that is that we are clearly paying what we've already have paid before in the past, and we're committed to doing so. Insofar as the government's statement, of course, we remain cautious in respect of the commitment up until 2020. And what we have said fairly publicly in relation to that is that
in the last 2 years the government has, as my friend had mentioned, worked back out in relation to this question on Brexit. But we would have thought, certainly on this side of the House, that we would have had a stronger commitment moving forward from 2020, although it is appreciated, the new words being echoed from the government now in relation to open-ended arrangements and the maintenance of the sort of core and enhancement of those arrangements. One thing that I would like to point out, Mr. Speaker, is in relation to the cross-border situation as well, that we have certainly noted that there needs to be an increase in our cooperation with our neighbours, because ultimately, when we are dealing with the issue, a very large issue that affects all of us in relation to Brexit, of course, we need to maintain those relationships to which the Minister has spoken about previously, relationships of consanguinity, I think is the word that he used, and commercial and business relationships across the frontier. Mr. Speaker, we broadly support and welcome the statements by the government, particularly in relation to financial services, but we again echo our concern and a note of caution moving forward from 2020. And I would also mention, Mr. Speaker, that when you speak to the normal man and woman on the street in relation to Brexit, their concern, of course, is that the Chief Minister and his team navigated safely through this storm that we appear to be in the middle of, Mr. Speaker. But the concerns of the man and woman on the street are, again, repeated to me daily and to my colleagues about domestic issues that affect them and their families, Mr. Speaker. And although I understand that the Chief Minister and his colleagues have been working flat out in respect to Brexit, it does mean there needs to also be an increased focus, and I would respectfully encourage the government to continue to focus on the domestic agenda and the concerns of normal working families during the Brexit situation and reconciliation in the United Kingdom government moving to further arrangements.
When the Chief Minister makes a statement of this nature, the practice is to allow the Leader of the Opposition to make a short statement in reply and to ask any questions of clarification that he may consider necessary. I can also extend the practice of allowing questions for clarification purposes to any other member of the opposition who may wish to do so. Then proceed with the next item on the agenda. Yes.
I don't know if the Honourable Gentleman recognising the work that has been done by the government in respect of these matters, and I'll deal with his final point at the end. But the broad welcome that Honourable Member gives seems to be tainted by some suggestion that some aspect of what has been announced by the United Kingdom is limited to 2020. Honourable members obviously have, through the Leader of the Opposition, expressed the desire that given all the hard work we have done already, we would already have a mechanism that would endure beyond 2020. And I want to clarify the position by saying again that there is a mechanism for all financial services and other services that are presently provided from Gibraltar into the United Kingdom to continue to be provided into the United Kingdom. That is the unshakable commitment of the UK government, not on a time-limited basis. That's why I explained to Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, that the issue of 2020 was as to mechanism, not as to principle. And so what the Honourable Gentleman tells me he wished we had achieved, I am confirming to him again, we have achieved, Mr. Speaker. Because that is the role that the Secretary of State for Everything in the European Union and the Secretary of State for International Trade, and one of the principal under-secretaries of the Department for Everything in the European Union, Stephen Barker, has specifically expressed the commitment that time limitation has come in not as a limitation of principle, it is because the mechanisms that we have in place are the mechanisms that will be in place until then, and there will be other mechanisms in place in respect of thereafter, because those will be the purely bilateral mechanisms, Mr. Speaker. What we're saying is, we're holding the ring on the single market terms of access until 2020, and we are agreed there will be continued access after that. That is the unthinkable commitment. And these are not new words, as the Honourable Gentleman said. These are words that come from January 2018, from December 2017 and from October 2016. And that is why I'm particularly surprised that honourable members say that they have to somehow caveat their welcome in a way that might be picked up by some operators in the market who might think that there isn't the certainty that there clearly and unmistakably is the respect of access by companies in Gibraltar doing financial services business beyond 2020. One might have to ask themselves why it is that anybody would want to create any uncertainty in that respect. We know the Spanish wanted to do that, but I would wonder why it would be that anybody in this House would want to do that. So I'm going to assume that that's what the Honourable Member did not intend to do. On the issue of education, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman says that this is just a continued commitment to pay the amount that has been paid. Again, Mr. Speaker, I have to clarify to him that that is not what we are dealing with. What we are dealing with is the potential that Gibraltarian students could be charged overseas student rates once we leave the European Union. And what we have achieved, Mr. Speaker, is that Gibraltarian students, Gibraltar scholarship students in the United Kingdom, after Brexit, will continue to be charged as home students. And therefore, the £4.5 million is money saved with the numbers stayed the same. So it's not that we're just confirming the commitment to continue to pay what we have paid. It's that we've been able to avoid any uncertainty as to whether that would be increased by 50%, Mr. Speaker. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I'm always very happy when people remind me of the fact that Brexit there are domestic issues to deal with. Because I don't want to deal with Brexit. I don't enjoy dealing with Brexit. We don't want to leave the European Union, but we're having to deal with it. But I do enjoy my domestic issues, Mr. Speaker, because I was elected by the people of Gibraltar to serve them. And that is what I principally do in the role that I serve. So therefore, Mr. Speaker, I'm really demanding that the government of Gibraltar needs to deal with domestic issues. We are not a centralised government. We have 10 ministers. Two of us are dealing principally with Brexit, other ministers are dealing with all the other matters that are relevant in domestic politics in Gibraltar. But I do have to say, Mr. Speaker, that it is slightly peculiar to be told one day that we have to continue to deal with the domestic issues and not forget them, by the same person who told me 6 months ago we weren't doing enough in education and told me 3 months ago we were doing too much, too fast, Mr. Speaker. We'll keep going.
The
end of the way on the table, the Ombudsman's annual report for the year end of the 31st of March 2017.
Report of committee, answer to all questions. We begin with question number 202, the Honourable Udo Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, further to the answer provided to question number 98 of 2018, can the Minister for Sport update his house in respect of the grade 9 of his administrative assistant post, which was vacant within the Sport of Sport and Local Authority?
Thank you, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the vacant grade 9 administrative assistant post, which is currently vacant with the Sport and Leisure Authority, is being covered temporarily by a supply worker via SEK recruitment.
And if you can last time the Minister has referred that the application for the post had been invited, is the Minister aware now? I think we can take it for granted the closing date has been passed. And indeed, there's a certain number of applicants and when the selection is expected to be completed.
Not at this time, Mr. Speaker. Question number 203, the Honourable Udo Hayes.
Further to the answer provided to question number 99 of 2018, can the Minister for Sport update his house in respect of the 5 staff vacancies for pool operatives for lifeguards, which are currently waiting to be filled on a substantive basis within the world of social media authority?
And to the end of the Minister for Culture, Media, Youth and Sport. the figures, the both experts and the law authority are in the process of interviewing candidates for the recruitment of five pool operatives.
Question number 204, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Sport inform the South how many cancellations have been necessary at any of the Gibraltar of Sport and Local Authority facilities since the answer provided to question number 100 of 2018, indicating the location, date, and reason for the cancellation?
I'm for the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
The Supreme Court answer provided in question 100 of 2018, the use of Victoria Sport Hall was cancelled due to water ingress on the 7th of March 2019.
The Speaker, from the answer that the Minister has given is just one day, just some feedback from sport users, for example, the Network Association seem to have had more than the one day cancellation. Is there a misinformation coming my way from there?
No, sir. Question number 205, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
There are three answers provided to question number 103 of 2018. Can the Minister for Sport update his house with details of payments made to date by the Gibraltar Football Association in respect of all facilities which they need for Victoria Stadium and which are due within this current financial year?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, no payments have been made by the Gibraltar Football Association as to date. The sale of the footprint in question has not been affected.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Minister for his answer. As you're fully aware, part payments have received 10 million this financial year, out of the 16.5 million, of which most of that, as I stated previously, is going to go towards paying for the new facilities to work the point in that regard. Is the Minister confident that these payments will be received, and if so, when?
Before the end of the financial year.
Question number 206, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Sport provide details in respect to the floodlight failure of Victoria Stadium since the 1st of January 2018, indicating the date when such failure occurred, the length of time taken to correct the floodlight deficit, and what action then has been taken to try and avoid these reoccurrences?
I'm the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, floodlight failures occurred this past weekend commencing on Saturday the 3rd of March when last fixtures needed to be called off due to...
Hello?
Must have been a phone protection.
Floodlight failures occurred this past weekend commencing on Saturday the 3rd of March when the last fixture needed to be called up due to a couple of fuses blowing. Backup works were carried out. However, an investigation into the problem was severely hindered with a torrential rain experienced over the weekend. Both evening fixtures on Sunday and the last fixture on Monday were cancelled. In total, four fixtures were postponed. The problem was fully assessed on Tuesday the 6th of March, and the contractor has lowered the output by switching off a few bulbs in order for the existing infrastructure to cater for the light on offer. A quote has been approved for a new switch fuse to be installed for the east side tiles in order to up the power supply
and take us to the floodlight to work at full capacity. The fruit will arrive in the next 10 days.
Those are the people. A couple of things are rising from there. And now, first of all, I'm going to collect a few minutes because I asked Captain Taylor to declare a statement that the references and the failures have already occurred in what we commonly know as the fifth district, the fifth district number one. And then I think the minister, when he answered, said that a quote would be the clue, and he enlightened us as to the figure of that quote.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is he has not asked that specifically in the question, so I do not have that information, but I could easily pass it to him at his convenience, because when we do have a three-page system, and we go through quotes, and so yes, I haven't got the information for him, but I can give it to him.
And the other part, I think the minister was not in yet for the melancholy certain week. Can you confirm that the entire failure was restricted to tip number one, the main tip of tip?
Yes, sir. Question number
200.
Thank you. I can ask the minister, given that the entire complex is going to be sold to DFA within the next 2 weeks, where is the responsibility for the maintenance is like to lie in the future?
Mr. Speaker, we are still in negotiations with the GFA on how we are going to approach them. Question number 207, the Honourable A.J. Hoyer.
Can the Canadian Minister for Sport provide updates of consolidated details of all payments made during the current financial year in respect of any sports-related funds?
And for the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I now hand over the Honourable Member up to the schedule in respect of all payments made during the current financial year in respect of any sports related grant. Is this information on the government website?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. When there is no need, there is no need to provide an answer here and take up Parliament's time unnecessarily.
Yes, I know that the Minister today hasn't said it. In the past, he has told me that information is available on the website. As I was referring to Parliament, the government website was not up and running, therefore, I could not access the information, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, the information is always updated in the website. It could well coincide that we have question time and it's not available, but it always is uploaded once we have the Parliament, because the questions might have been put a week ago, and therefore during that week they are updated and they're constantly updated.
Being an empty one, Mr. Speaker, would you indulge me the approach you've done in the past? If I've seen a thing in the sky and have something arising from it, I went up. Because if one has pages of details and I need to do a quick comparison in case I cannot identify the particular item.
Question number 208, the Honourable E.J. Hoyer.
Can the Minister for Culture provide that type of consolidated details of all cultural grants awarded in this current financial year?
Thank you, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, I hand over the Honourable Member opposite updated details of the cultural grants awarded for this financial year. I would like to take this opportunity to remind the Member that updated information is posted again on the HMDAG website.
I'm grateful for that, Mr. Speaker, but I must explain to you that there is a particular deadline of time don't understand that when one has to submit questions on the Amazon activities at that time, and I know challenges that we need to make it valid to go to questions to speak on. I'm sorry. I cannot do the media.
Question number 209, the honourable Mr. Tim Davis Fanon.
Can government update the House on the current status of the state park?
I said the honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sports.
Mr. Speaker, the state park currently located on the east side of the territory is open daily from approximately 8 in the morning to 10:30 p.m. This process falls within the footprint of land soon to be sold to the Gibraltar Football Association. The Gibraltar Sports and Leisure Authority are closely working with the Gibraltar State Skating Association with regards to a new site for the skate park. Skate park installers have already been approached to provide conceptual design.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Member for his answer, but if I may just say that I was approached by some young lads who made their presentations to me about the closure of the skate park, and I would take his word for it if it's open, but if these young teens are telling me that they're not finding it open, could it be that it's been down temporarily for maintenance, because from their point of view, they don't seem to find access to it.
The only reason that they might, and I'm talking, thinking aloud for the things that might have happened, is that cars might have been parked in front, and therefore they couldn't have access, or that lorries have been lit up loading and unloading, and they haven't been able to go in. That I can, I know because I attend that place quite often, and it usually opens from 8 o'clock in the morning to 10:30 at night. The fact that maybe one or two youngsters might not be able to access at one given day because a car might be parked or roads might be unloading or anything like that is a bit unfortunate. But I can tell the honourable lady, and I can tell the honourable lady also that we are satisfied with what we've got now, but we're going to make it much better. We're going to make a skate park, because like I said, I've already had representations from the Skating Fraternity Association, young people coming to my office wanting the skate park. And some of them who are not even members of the association who have approached me on this matter.
So just one potential question, and the Minister has raised the question of possible blocking of cars at the state park. It's something that's been different. I was watching my son run, and I know that students also attend that area on a frequent basis, but I think the students are pretty agree with me at this point, that the traffic issue there is horrendous, and it's been a difficult one for many times to experience that. And I suspect the reason why many of these children can't access the state park is because of the very, very difficult drop-off parking issues concerning that particular area. And I was wondering whether the Minister knew, in order to alleviate the issues clearly to the state park, that's where the parents that drop off their children are indeed trying to park in order to watch their children play sports, so the government had any solution to that in the interim period before that area is sold off.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there has been a solution of sorts, because if you look now at the way that they are painted, the parking slots have been painted, there is a speculation in order to come in and out. But one can't, stop parents to stop the car in the middle of what is supposed to be a flowing. You drop off your child, you then drive around where the cars are parked in the middle. But, sometimes parents are, I wouldn't say inconsiderate, but they are in a rush, or they want to see their children in and therefore park the car in the middle. These are things that we can mitigate as much as we can, but there are times when we need to actually solution.
Thank you. Question number 210, the honourable Ms. Andrew Hassanan.
Does government intend to restore the football pitch in May's Castle Estate to work in order?
Until the end of the week, it's a call for the media and youth and state.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 211 of 2018.
Question number 211, the answer is indeed as I know.
Does government have intentions to restore the play park at North Castle Estate to work in order?
Until the end of the week, it's a call for the media and youth and state.
Mr. Speaker, a football pitch within Mills Castle Estate is currently being used as a lay-down storage area by DJDF Limited under the Major Works Refurbishment Project and will be refurbished to a standard which is fit for purpose. With regards to the play park, there are two parks within the confines of Mills Castle Estate. One is located within the vicinity of Key Heights and is open for use. The other play park is located behind Carrick House and Wall House and has been closed for a very long time. This particular park is currently part of the works and visits under the major refurbishment work project to the estate. These works are scheduled to commence shortly.
Mr. Sugai, thank you, Honourable Member, for his answer. And the question of the football pitch, from what I understand, of course, like you said, it's to do with using it as a depot for the construction materials, but I know that it's been out of use for apparently about 3 years, and the children there are desperate to be able to get it back and play and have somewhere they can physically do some exercise. Is there any way that the Minister could maybe relocate that construction equipment, because it has been a very long time and these children, possibly they are in the upper town and they need to exercise a little bit and they're really desperate to get it back, so I'm echoing their sentiment. And then question 211 is the same. Is there any way that, you know, they could recruit these areas so that they can actually, you know, have a bit of extra sports and
maybe
time up
there. Mr. Speaker, I can agree more than about me and what the Honourable Lady is saying. I do completely agree. We have, I go there again often because we have a place for youth clubs, which I know is going around and seeing the youth clubs and all the good work that the youth club is doing. And these are the things that the young people who go to the youth club say that they can't play football and all that. But, you know, one of these things that we try and mitigate is just in time. And all I can do is try and go to the contractors who can finish as quickly as possible so that the children can have these programs back. But other than that, there is not much more I can do.
So, to have them talk to the Minister, there is no way to find another location to store construction equipment for the moment, right?
But I know.
Can I make a quick question back to the answer question to 211 and 7? I'm very grateful because, as the Minister and I have spoken last time, it is not consolidated under the same heading. One small question, Mr. Speaker. The payment and the grant award for hosting of special space allegedly for £5,965. Classified as gold coast expenses, which is the same as the previous time. But on the next page, and the third grant was awarded for international competition, the third coin was gained 42,000. Surely, those coin was gained by the same level of taking of change, which is the same as the gold coast, which is happening now. So I'm a bit sort of uncertain of why they're affected. Why I'm having had them both together, like for example, you know. The Minister decided to do it for target shooting and shooting association because they're all shooting related. So that one gives me a sort of an uneasiness of exactly what is what.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not fully aware of why that is. I will be asking the question myself. But I am sure it's something to do with the actual gain, which is not payment to the association itself. could there be some sort of to the international association or maybe the Gold Coast organizers or anything like that? But I will ask.
Thank you for thinking so. If the minister wasn't going to get an answer, we would be in that. Can I also call you something? Because I had called you last night. There were some expenses in giving them the answer to question 101 of 2018, where the three related to extra premium services, one was for the vote of some festival, the other was for the boxing event, and the other one was for the humanity event, and they, I do not see them in the answer to question 107. It could be that they have been sent over to another subject. If the minister has information, that would carry so much.
Well, Mr. Speaker, because he actually mentioned that to me last time, and he was absolutely right, because it shouldn't have been here, it has actually been moved from here to another head, and therefore it does not appear here anymore, because, in fact, when I did get the original schedule, there were these things in it, and I said they shouldn't be here, and that's why it was already moved. Now we're back to the paper youth club question the Honourable Lady asked. I was slightly worried by the answer that the Honourable Gentleman gave. And is the government's position that there is nowhere else in Gibraltar where they can store this material has to by necessity go in an area that has previously been used by the youth of that area to basically endure their activities? And if that is the case, when did the government expect that state of affairs to end? Because surely we can't have a situation where that just simply continues open-endedly. Peter, actually, the first part of his question is the materials that to be used in Mulhassel. I would assume that there is no other place in the world to put them other than in Mulhassel itself. And there wouldn't be stuff that in somewhere else as opposed to in the country. But I do accept that, you know, these are works which are unprecedented works that we are doing, which could have been done nearly 20 years ago, and when we were in the government, and they weren't done, now we are doing them. We are fixing up all the estates, and these are the consequences sometimes of trying to fix up the estates. I, like I said in my answer to the Honourable Lady, I will try and pressurize the complexities higher up and get on with it, so that the children do go back to young back.
Question number 212, the Honourable Alec Lamont.
Canada will provide a monthly schedule from December 2011 stating how much has been spent on water English-related works on the route of at the Victoria Sports Hall, including the name of the contractor or contractor.
And for the end of the month, for Culture, Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 213 of 2018.
Question number 213, the Honourable Alec Lamont.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a monthly schedule from December 2011 stating how much has been spent on water English related work on the roof at the certain senior sports hall, including the name of the contractor or contractors?
And for the end of the month, the Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
The details of payment relating to water English work of the roof of the Victoria Stadium and the Secretary Hall are as follows. Victoria Stadium, financial year 15-16, right pay limited amount 1,200, date 21st of the 12th of 15. Financial year 16 and 17, South Stadium, amount £1,048.40. Date the 10th of the 2nd, 16. Self trading £732 on the date 10th, 3rd, 18. Person CDA Hall, Sports Hall. Financial year 12, 13. 2JDS.
£4,993.90 on the 30th of the 1st, 13. Financial year, 13-14. A&K, £66,768. 12 of the 8th of 13. Financial year, 14-15. Delco Limited, £20,000. 16th of the 1st of the 14th. Financial year 16 and 17, Delco Limited, 8,200 on the 28th, 10, 16, 12,800 on the 12th, 12, 16, and 3,600 on the 27th of the 1st, 1917.
I ask the Honourable Minister to check the first part of his answer. Financial year 2016-2018, he gave the site trading 10,318. Is that correct, 10-3-18, or should it be 10-3-17?
Mr. Speaker, is it financial year 16-17? Site trading, £1,038, site at £732. It should be 16. 17, because it's in math. Yeah. So it is wrong, yes. So therefore, can I just say, if the Honourable Member just amends that from 18 to 17? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr.
Speaker, in relation to these works, given that the different companies and contractors are undertaking these works, is it a fact that these works are different and unrelated to each other, or is it possible that a company is repairing work done by another contractor?
No, Mr. Speaker, this is a system which the other member usually asks us about doing it out to tender. And it is a question of getting three quotes of different companies to do the work. So when we identify the problem, companies are called in, they submit their quotations, and then we decide which one is the value for money one that we pick. That is why you get different companies coming in. That is the answer. It's the three-quote system that we use. So that we give chance to all the companies to get in.
We now move to question number 272, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Were your assessments made of the risk and impact of rockfalls on beach view terraces prior to the construction, and if so, by whom were they approved?
I'm from the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, we'll answer this question together with questions 273 to 277.
Question number 273, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Prior to the rockfall that occurred on 2nd of March onto Devil's Tower Road, had any surveys of the rock in that area been conducted recently, and if so, when?
Question number 1274, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
What measures are governments intending to take to mitigate the risk of further rockfalls landing on Devil's Tower Road?
Question number 1275, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Is government intending to provide improved alternate access for the residents of Beachview Terrace to mitigate the impact of any further rockfalls in this area?
Question number 276, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Will the planned construction of a visitor centre in order to the exact location of where the largest rock fell, is government satisfied that it is safe to proceed with this project as planned, or are further measures required to ensure public safety?
Question number 277, the Honourable Joe Phillips.
Can the government say panel checks were conducted on the rock face and other areas which are prone to or present a risk of injury or damage to property from rock falls over the last 24 months?
I'm for the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the beach itself is developing both a considerable distance away from main workplace projections from the workplace. When the development was reviewed by the Technical Services Department in 2013, there was no reason to suggest that the development was at any risk of the impact of workplace. This conclusion was reached on the strength of reports carried out in 2005 and 2009 when works were being considered on the area fan site. These clearly showed that works for directions were contained well within the area fan site. Those studies have been commissioned in the area of the area fan between the North Face and Berry Star Road. These have included the following. In 2005, there was a golden report for the Hormonosis for the development of the site. In 2009, a Golder Letter Report for Government for Use of Site was sold as rubble. In 2014, Golder Staking Study for the Young Boat Site. In 2014, a Golder Report of the Government for a Major Work Fall of December 2014. Following the Work Fall of the 2nd of March 2018, Technical Service Department carried out a visual inspection of the North Face together with Golder Associates to determine the possible causes of the risk fall and identify immediate and longer-term solutions to mitigate the risk of further risk falls in the area. The initial assessment has concluded that the risk fall has occurred in a similar area to the risk fall of 2014, and it appears that the residual risk of further risk fall from that location is small. The Redfall trajectory modeling carried out in the past, together with observation of recent Redfall patterns, provides confidence that primary Redfalls are contained within the area fan site. There is, however, some concern on the effects of flywork from rock crashing upon impact. In the first instance, a robust building will be constructed along the boundary of the site to contain the flywork. This will then be followed by more detailed survey of the rock face to determine whether large magnitude rock falls are likely. This will then provide information on the type and extent of mitigation measures which can be put in place to reduce the impact of further rock falls as much as possible. Although it is too soon to say whether these mitigation measures will be, what the mitigation measures will be, it is likely that they will include distance and schemes to minimize the impact of further rock falls as much as reasonably possible. In the light of the recent rock fall event, Hilton Damage Reporter can confirm that we are considering keeping the rear access to beach utilities that was created following the rock fall as an emergency relief road. In the part of the planning process, all developments which are proposed within the main rock fall area are required to engage a reputable geotechnical engineering consultant who would need to be approved by the government to carry out the necessary risk assessments for the proposed development and provide advice on any works that may be considered necessary to allow development to proceed and to ensure its continued stability and safety thereafter. Further discussion will be carried out with the developer as initial proposals for the visitor centre did clearly not anticipate the magnitude of rockfall which occurred on the 2nd of March 2018. It is important to try and identify the residual risks of further rockfalls and whether initial proposals to mitigate these risks are acceptable in the long term. Mr. Speaker, over the past 24 months, numerous inspections have been carried out by the Technical Service Department on the number of cases around Gibraltar. These have mainly been carried out at the Upper Rockmont Reserve in areas which have included Signal Station Road, Engineer Road, the 8th Bend, and Maidstone Street. Other areas have included Green Lane, which is currently still closed off to vehicular traffic as a result of the known risk of rockfalls in the area. Other study areas carried out by the Technical Service Department have included the East Side Slope, and this has seen construction of two sections of high-capacity rock cut fences being installed at the base of the slope just to the south of both roads. Both these phases have seen the construction of 50-meter lengths of high-capacity fence with total construction costs of just over £300,000 for each phase. This clearly demonstrates
government's continued commitment to the issue of rock safety. Mr. Speaker, the Rock of Gibraltar is a large geological feature with a number of geological faults and different rock strata. The total surface area of the coast around Gibraltar and the various and often complex mechanisms that trigger rock falls make it an impossible task to predict, and therefore mitigate against every rock fall event which can take place. The Technical Service Department has responsibility for rock safety, therefore focuses their efforts on those areas where there is a known history of rock falls and where the impact of these will be greatest on the general public. We also react to rock fall events as they occur and where necessary, provide additional measures to reduce the impact of these. It must also be noted that for over 20 years, the responsibility for mitigation against the effects of rock falls has fallen on developers who wish to develop in areas in which there is a known rock fall hazard. As previously mentioned, part of the planning process is to engage irrevocably to a technical engineering consultant who is deemed to be approved by government. The management government of Gibraltar is fully committed to the issue of mitigating against the risk of rock fall and will continue to invest in this area as we have done so far.
Speaker, just in relation to my question 277, I think I asked the Minister how many checks were conducted. He described it. I think the answer was numerous, but if the Minister having further information in relation to the numbers, that might not be the nature of my question.
Speaker, I have laid out the locations as to how many each specific location, the total amount, I have not got to this point. And you can say that numerous studies have been carried out in all those locations that I have mentioned to you in the question.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Minister described mentioned two reports, one in 2005 and 2009. Can we to confirm the commissioner's report?
Mr. Speaker, what normally happens in my reply is that when a developer wishes to develop a certain site, it is then who can site and get a local engineer to drive them with his own entities. And that is the procedure, and it's based upon that report that that is done. I mean, they're responsible to either way, they do not cannot progress along the time process.
The assessment of particularly vulnerable parts of the rock, insofar as the health and safety of people and potential damage to property, is only assessed when developers are considering using sites for development.
Mr. Speaker, no, but this is ongoing. I mean, but when there is specific applications of specific sites, when there is a more detailed and a very detailed study which is carried out by a consultant approved by government, in this case, the one that government has used for many years has been Golder Associates.
Speaker, Golders, I think, deal with environmental ground engineering remediation and deal specifically with governments in relation to risks concerning geological, complex geological features such as our rock. One question I would have in relation to that, of course, is I've asked how many, is the government satisfied that we have the necessary expertise, technical expertise in technical services to carry out these tests and checks on either the North Coast and other parts of Gibraltar? Because clearly, as a huge geological feature, we have very detailed knowledge and expertise in relation to the wreck itself, given that it's a huge geological feature, it's a complex geological feature we've lived with for generations. Is the government satisfied as to the level of expertise and experience that we have in terms of testing in response to potential rock falls and any health and safety risks associated with falls?
speaker for years and years. This is the way his reputation of department is as excellent as it possibly can be. The numerous skills in the civil NGO and in the initial crisis when it comes to specifically to work for this is why companies like Golders are engaged for the purpose. So if there's the field was by inspection that there's certain risk that they can see if there's something not right, then we'll always put the production would be to seek the advice of consultants, and as you said, it is Golders who are considered the expert and through that guidance for the purpose.
My answer to the question is related to the fact that if you call the report from 2005-2009 commissioned by developers, I think it referred to by the Minister as the Golders report, clearly demonstrated that there was no risk of rockfall trajectory insofar as what we've experienced of late. Therefore, that the risk that was exposed clearly wasn't foreseen in the context of the Golders report, and therefore you will understand and appreciate the concern by obviously many of our residents, and certainly from this side of the house, that we are trying to drill down on what types of assessments are made to the North Face and other parts of the Gold that present a risk to injury. And therefore, that's the type of question that we've been asking the Minister, and that's why we'd like those specific answers to our questions regarding the numbers of tests and how invasive these tests are in relation to particularly vulnerable spots.
Mr. Speaker, the gentleman wishes a detailed of all the different dates that can be provided. I have not got the information with me. But what those have changed in time, we've never experienced the size of a rockfall that we have recently. There are 700 tons of rock falling. This is a spell in this season. The previous rockfall in 2014, I think I said, was 500 tons. So this has been the largest rockfall. And when rocks do fall, generally the rock falls and we can predict where it's going to fall. But the issue of fly rock, which is what has happened in the past two occasions, is not something new. To us in that respect. So it's not where the rock falls, it's where it's going to reach you. And that is a new sound because we have not seen the magnitude of rock falls that we've seen now. In the past, there's been much smaller rock falls in different areas where the height has been a lot less. And then you look at the rock falls and you don't know when or if ever there's going to be another rock fall. And it is impossible to see exactly whether there will ever be another rock fall again. Or whether they won't. I mean, the consultants have in the preliminary studies, they've looked at the wet face, and they think, I mean, again, it's just an opinion because we can never guarantee it, that, what's fallen is good that it's fallen because of anything that was what was remaining there that could have fallen. And they believe that, that the risk is substantially reduced now. But again, we can't say that it's never going to happen again. So it's something to go through, but we do live very close to rock, and there are many estates that surround the rock, and there is a happy balance. We must ensure that the people that live or work in the area particularly outside of the area, so when rocks do fall, they stay where they should, but then it's very difficult. For us to predict this thing, and this is, it's like living beside the sea, and you don't know when the next 100-year storm is going to occur again, and see part of the world. So it's one of those things.
So I appreciate the explanation, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister has given in relation to the new phenomenon of large rock falling in our community. I think that it's a very interesting new phenomenon. And also, what I would say. I will give away. What the Honourable Member has said is that fly rock is a new phenomenon. Fly rock, Mr. Speaker, is when a large rock falls, splits, and then when it splits, the shrapnel flies from there. It's not that the falling rock is a new thing, it's that impact followed by shrapnel is something that hasn't been assessed. That's what the Honourable Member said. I'm grateful for the assistance and Chief Minister and template to do that fly rock and how it's split. But Mr. Speaker, generally speaking, that people that come to us and speak to us about the new phenomenon and it's splitting rock, on our road, Mr. Speaker. Is the government commissioning an extensive review of significantly risk prone areas to rock falls or slipping rocks across our road so that the community domain can be restored as much as possible and reduce the mitigation possible to injury, to personal injury or damage to property?
The honourable member has mentioned this phenomenon, which I didn't say the word phenomenon, but it wasn't the word I mentioned. But the reason why this hasn't happened before is because our rock falls in the past have been much and significantly smaller. So when there's a couple of times that fall, then it just falls absorbed by the earth below, and that's the end of it. So when you consider that 700 tons of stone, and the power that comes down at 10 meters per second acceleration, when it hits the ground, I mean, this has never happened before. I mean, back in 2015, I think I mentioned. So it is a relevant, it is a new phenomenon, if you want to call it, because we've never had rock falls in the before. That the focus of what the government do is the legal responsibility of the government. They're constantly looking at the rock. But the rock is a huge, although it is small comparatively to our world around us, it is a huge rock. And at risk, there's always at risk. And be able to identify and actually see where potentially the next rock could fall. It's very, very difficult, and it is impossible. Anything can cause a rock fall. For example, even a bird not in the rock can cause rock to fall. Even trees growing, the roots could cause rock fall. There's also what there are times of year when it's raining. As you know, in bad weather, that is also statistically that is when rock falls do occur. So, and that is when we're most vigilant in that respect.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask a question. Bottom line, had there been a tragedy or had there been loss of life or even substantial damage to human life, who would have borne the consequences of this? The government, the contractor? Where does the buck stop here?
The other lady is asking us a hypothetical question, and I think we all agree it's a good thing that it's a hypothetical question. But there are some things that we cannot plan for. And unfortunately, there are clauses in contracts of insurance, which used to be known as the clause on act of God, which is also described as a force majeure clause, where what we are dealing with is something that is a natural event that is unforeseeable. And Mr. Speaker, short of planning for the whole of the North Coast to fall, it is impossible to do anything other than that which successive governments of Gibraltar have done now for generations, which is to have an active, current, and ongoing program of cliff stabilization, which means that the Technical Services Department of the government every year brings to the government those areas where they believe it is necessary to do cliff stabilization in that financial year. And they seek budget for it, we come to the House and we approve it, and we deal with those issues of cliff stabilization. Now, there will be areas which are not served with cliff stabilization, which are the areas that happen to create rockfall in that year. Minor rockfall or larger rockfall, then creating the new phenomena that we seem to disagree we are talking about. That's the reality. Now, if somebody comes to the government and to a tunnel which is accessed through the rock face, and the government says, we are unable to give you access to that tunnel, absent risk from rock face from the North Face, you have to deal with your expert and our expert putting in place whatever plan they agree with the plan that you need in order to create a canopy to give access there safely, and the method statement for how that is done. That is not a government issue, that's an issue of experts having agreed on methodology which was working until the rockfall happened with their assessment of risk. That's what we're dealing with here. I mean, this is an act of God, an act of force majeure, and thank God, Mr. Speaker, I'm able to give a short answer to the Honourable Lady, which is that her question is my defense.
Thank you for the answer. If I may ask a couple of questions. So may I understand that the rule is removed for the contractor? So my father was asking, would the something happen that would have led to a tragedy? It's not just because force majeure, earthquakes, and volcanoes and things happen. Something was removed which could have led to a disaster, and who is responsible for the fact that there was a void in the protection by the effect of that removal? And the other question is, I don't know, I might be allowed to ask, but can I just find out if it's possible whether what is happening with the wine void? I mean, is it happening, or is that not allowed in the supplementary?
Mr. Speaker, the earthquake could have happened, could not have happened. It's something which there's no certainty about. Now, why was the wall that the young lady mentioned removed? Was because the wall has to be removed, but the construction could take place and for access to be gained. Now, the unlucky part of the situation was, again, we had no one had control over it, that the rocks decided to fall, and at that moment in time, the wall wasn't there. Nothing could have happened, and I think something good. So there's actually no way of scanning the rock or doing an MRI scan on the rock, basically, where potentially a rock can fall when the wall is going to be removed for a specific purpose. Now, regarding the second part of the question, which is what happens now to the closing of the vault on Europe in light of what's happening, where a more thorough investigation needs to be carried out, and we need to take into consideration this new phenomenon, as has just been mentioned, why is it phenomenon as firework? So, because it's something which we have not experienced in the past, so now bearing in mind that fly rocks, if ever there were to be a rock for the magnitude we experienced recently, what happened then? And fly rock becomes useful, then we would have to mitigate that as well. So that is something new in that respect, because in the past, rocks have been substantially smaller and the impact is less good by the surface of the land.
Mr. Speaker, just picking up on the question of the state of Rome, the minister has made that you cannot MRI the rock face. Now, I recall about 3 years ago that I was sitting there with my wife Julia in the living room in my house, and I heard a buzzing sound outside the house, and I came out, and there was a drone flying in my garden. So I thought it was a two-seater from his living room, but this drone started up a two-seater, although I just evaluated completely by the second section. I did phone the IDP, because I thought, maybe it's somebody could carry them to go and do the meeting to the ground. And they put me in contact with a contractor that was conducting, apparently, a pit survey in Gibraltar, all around Gibraltar. Because that's the only way that you can establish where there are potential, well, not the only way, but one of the ways you can establish where there are potential weaknesses. Now, my question is that given that information, did that information in that survey reveal any particular weakness in this particular area of the rock face that would have alerted the government that there was a potential problem in this area?
The drone is for visual inspection, having an MRI in that respect. But this is the method they use, the scientists will use, to see whether it's required to visual inspection, because there's no other way from the ground certain elevations. So that is the method used in that respect. Had the drone or whatever method they use picked up of areas which were significantly at risk, and that was the conclusion made by the government, clearly something would have done a respect. But because it's something which it's setting things which look out of place for, and again, I may be speculating, because I have not got that information on with me, but I'm sure had the consensus found a reason which was confirmed and being the rock face, that would have been brought to our attention
and something we've been done about it. I mean, part of my question refers to Green Lane as well. I mean, the Green Lane, the mitigation, unfortunately for residents, is that we have to close that road because the risk is considered substantially large enough and for us to do so. And obviously, perhaps it wasn't a popular thing at the time, but it is for the safety of the individuals. The fact, you know, people have been, I mean, complaining that they haven't been able to access the road and the road is remain closed, but it's because, you know, the proper measures need to be taken so we can mitigate and ensure that, you know, we are as confident as humanly possible, you know, that the risk is reduced to a significant level, a low enough level, to be able to permit access once again. So, and that is really happening, will be happening, the road is due to reopen later on this evening, and I haven't heard anything from the country, so that is what we are aiming for. So, based on that, yes, based on that, you know, it's that is the way we are proceeding at the moment.
So, have any questions? Was you concerned? Was concerned by it? Simply because one is kind, it doesn't mean we're not out to get you, as they say. But if the minister is satisfied, and if he doesn't have the information, I don't want him to answer the question based on incomplete information. And perhaps if he's not satisfied, he can go back. But as a consequence of that inspection 3 years ago, with these drones looking at the rock face, that there was no information that came to the attention of the government at the time that indicated any kind of particular weakness in this area that would have alerted the government to the need to do something about that area.
Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't be able to give a concrete reply to the question we're having to ask a question to my technical division.
If I may, Mr. Speaker. I genuinely thank the Minister for the comprehensive answer so far because I think this is a matter of significant public interest and relevance at the moment. I note the comments on the removal of a wall for the construction. Is the Minister aware whether that wall was in place to prevent falling rocks or fly rocks from reaching out into Devil's Tower Road and beyond, or was it just a wall to segregate the existing site? And also, is the Minister aware of whether there were any other measures in place which may have been removed since for the restriction of mitigation of rock fall on the Devil's Tower Road?
Speaker, the wall itself would have helped. It wasn't the way the wall was there. I think it was a barrier wall dividing the road from the other site. But it would have provided some protection in that respect. And that was the reason it was to gain access into the site. The walls were also a band there, and that was removed in part as a result of the development to the Wandles area. So, but then, when, as I said previously, what falls prior to this last occasion, you know, as far as we've known them, has simply fallen, and the impact has been absorbed by the land because of these small rockfalls. We've never experienced a rockfall of this magnitude before. So now, obviously, we will need to be looking at, you know, measures. So, what we've done with the thing which we've actually been putting out in the public domain, we've moved the road, the rest of the road, towards the beach. And using part of the land that was still under construction, which will form part of the new road into the tunnel, to try to move cars further away from the area, which will give us time to build a wall which will be probably provisional in nature. It's a wooden hoarding which will help prevent, to some extent, further firework with more rock fall. As I said earlier, the risk is considered relatively small now after it's fallen, but then we can never say it's never going to happen again. But that is what the consultants have come back with, but it's no guarantee. So the wall will go back, and then once the wall, that wall of holding is back in a couple of weeks' time, as a mitigation measure, then we bring the road, we realign the road as it was once again. One of the risk of rockfall, statistically, has always happened when it rains and when the weather is bad and when it's windy. That's not to say that it won't ever happen when it's dry, so it's something which, and then you say, a phenomenon. It's going to happen before and lots of falling in dry weather. But because the weather has been settled, we always learn quite a caution, and obviously we try to make it as far as possible, and it's taken a while for us to be able to create now this diversion in this respect. I will be following the advice and that goal is provided after that, what we react and respond to.
Mr. Speaker, I know the Minister has referred to the area farmer on numerous occasions now. Can you define that? Because my understanding of the area farm was actually the area on which Beach Beach Terrace and Newton Beach Car Park were constructed, not the other side of the road, albeit there were areas on that side of the road as well. But that whole piece, to me, always meant the area farm. If you were to say, he seems to be taking a narrower definition of the area farm.
Mr. Speaker, I had the same view on the matter just a few days ago. I asked the same question because in my mind, the area farm was always that part closest to the Eastern Beach. And I was informed that the area farm, in fact, is at both sites with a road in between. So now the area farm we're referring to is the area farm back to the left and north where the new building is.
And one final question, Mr. Speaker. Again, on the removal of the bund and the wall, when it was determined that would be necessary as part of the latest construction project, was the risk of doing that, of removing that wall protection captured within any assessments made by the developer and presented to the DCC, or was it missed entirely? Because clearly those measures may have prevented some of the risk of the damage of property, and thankfully there's no injury was sustained from this particular rock fall. I think we have to be careful about talking about a new phenomenon. Historically, at least, we're aware, even if we haven't had any in recent memory, there are quite significant rock falls. I think if you look at Catherine Bay, there are one or two rocks there that have fallen at some point in the past, which are very substantial indeed. And I'm not suggesting that such a repetition extraction event could be prevented by any means that we've taken. I certainly welcome the fact the government is looking at additional measures and hopefully is doing so in a hurry. And there's already come to some measures to mitigate. But I would be interested in whether or not the risk of what was accounted for as part of this construction project during the phase of the project.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure it was. There is an exclusion zone, and all property is outside of what they call 95% of that exclusion zone. You asked whether it did or didn't. But again, the work was considered. Safe enough to not need the band in that respect. And we think that the wall itself would probably have been enough. But then the behaviour of wildlife, we need to now look into further, because we need to analyse how it reacts when it falls in this manner and this magnitude. So now we need to now look at this in further detail. We need to assess what's happening there, what the developments are, and ensure that we are fully aware of what needs to be done. And we're looking, as I said in my question, perhaps building bridges and building other forms of better, even looking at the website itself, to see whether anything needs to be done to remain more safe. But then it's still very early days, we're waiting for a final report from Golda. One final question,
on this. There have been questions of the government about the wall that was taken down, and the issue about whether it's forcing the wall or after God, etc. But the government is satisfied that the wall, the taking down the wall, did not contribute to the rock wall. At least that is something that the government can consider it satisfied. Or is it an ongoing investigation? I don't know. It's the first time that I've heard about the wall in this bank.
the speaker guarantees is 100% possible.
Question number 278, the Honourable Alec Young.
Mr. Speaker, first question 587 of 2017, can the government provide an updated schedule including A, monthly revenue generated, and B, monthly cost of running the scheme?
Answer the end of the market range is set for them.
Mr. Speaker, we'll ask this question together with question 279.
Question number 279, the Honourable Alec Young.
Mr. Speaker, is the government considering reducing fees on ready bikes considerably to make them more attractive?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Alec Young wants to start the campaign.
Mr. Speaker, the monthly revenue generation is being decided by now hands over. The monthly cost for running the scheme is £4,400. Mr. Speaker, ready bikes went live in May last year, and government has closely monitored usage since its inception. I can confirm that pricing has already been reduced since September 2017 from £2 to £1 today. The project will be reviewed after a year, and the possibility of relocating some stations to areas where usage will be optimized is also being considered. Mr. Speaker, just looking at the schedule, the original schedule provided an answer to question 507 of 2017 did include the number of users today. Does it mean to have that information with him?
No, Mr. Speaker, we said we have handed over the honourable gentleman is the revenue generated by the scheme.
Mr. Speaker, I would appreciate it if it means that perhaps you may back after the session. With regards to the question, would the government agree that whilst we have a free parking within the Midtown parking, which provides 12 hours of free parking, that people are not going to embrace this scheme, and obviously the ready bikes would not take off in a way that obviously people, if they just find a more convenient way of travelling, then they would embrace, but obviously having free parking in Midtown parking and not having and finding that, you know, using the ready bike is actually more expensive to the pocket. Is this something that the government could actually agree on and pursue?
I do not think that the actual cost is what, you know, distracting people from the scheme as such. I mean, £1 a day for using the bike, and if you use the bike it will be long for £1 a day, £2. I don't think that is really a lot more factors surrounding why people may be successful or not. And weather has a lot to do with when you look at statistics, and when the weather is bad and there is less usage, when the weather is better in August, there's a lot more usage in that respect. So I think, you know, part of the SDG, we are looking at how to try to encourage people to adopt sustainable alternative forms of transport. And I think one of the challenges that we are having to face, how do we get people, you know, to use bicycles as opposed to their cars? That is major issue. But there is, yes, I'm happy that there is usage. They're being used on a monthly basis. Not to say that no one is using them. I would like to see them use a lot more, definitely. And I think that we need to look at locations, because we're finding that usage perhaps happens. Although the scheme was originally intended to be a commuter, with power units for commuter use, I don't think it's been taken up as much as I would like to see in the commuter, because most people can buy a bicycle and they're relatively cheap. And you know, I buy a bicycle and I can take it all the way to my office and take it all the way home. I don't need to leave it somewhere and work for it to visit. So it is convenient in that respect. And I don't think make it, you know, free service or a key a day, 1 point a day or 1 point a day will make much difference in that respect. So we are looking at moving some of the less used places, because we're coming to that 1 year mark now. I think it's May, we come to the year, and then we have to visit for 1 year, and then beyond that point, we'll be in a position to compare year on year usage, and what I'm hoping for is an increase in usage, both still and very early days. But we are looking at the stations which are being used the least, and
considering moving those, if I'm more than considering where we are, actually looking at where we can move into and perhaps spreading them out further towards the hotel and to the east side as well, and make it a sports area in that respect. And we hope that will help encourage the use of those. I think it's a lot more complex than just the usage, the usage, I don't think that the usage will make much difference. I think it's a very good rate to come down from £2 to £1 already.
If I can just pick up on something that the Honourable Member just said, the government is looking to find ways to relocate the stations for the bikes and all that, isn't it just as important or even more so to consider finding actually building routes for bicycles so that the bicycle users are not riding through potholes on the road and have designated bicycle routes as we see in other cities in the world?
Yes, that would be the picture that I was alluding to earlier on the government maybe asked this question. It's more to it than just the money, it's the high cost people feel. And that is what we are actually doing as part of the traffic plan. We are already quite advanced with looking at this. Unfortunately, we live, is a place where streets are narrow. We don't have the luxury that you find other bigger cities where you can have a segregated bicycle lane which provides a space that people may wish to see for them to be able to adopt cycling. But as far as possible, we will be finding ways of giving people routes which are feasible in certain areas and which will provide safety, and we see where that will also help. I think you're right in that respect. It's more than just the full path for you to see. It's providing also a possible alternative, which we are very actively doing at the moment.
Question number 219, the Honourable Elephant.
Since 2011. Can the government provide details for each bus that has refurbished, including A, the year the bus was manufactured, B, the cost of the refurbishment, and C, the usage purpose for each bus?
And for the end of the market, the infrastructure and planning.
Mr. Speaker, this is a question that you all remember is contained in the schedule. I will now hand over.
Question number 281, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government say how many parking spaces have been made available for residents of the residential parking scheme zone 2?
Answer the other major points of spectrum planning.
Mr. Speaker, I answer questions for the questions 282 to 284.
Question number 282, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government state currently how many applications have been received for residential parking scheme zone 2?
Question number 283, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government state that they will be looking to interim measures given the apparent lack of demand in residential parking scheme zone 2, in particular outside the city walls?
Question number 284, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government disclose the public feedback source when designing the residential parking scheme zone 2?
Answer the other one, the infrastructure and planning.
Mr. Speaker, within the area designated as residential parking scheme zone 2, there are 505 on-street residential parking spaces available. Holders of zone 2 residence parking permits are also at the parking loading and unloading bays after the operational hours, and therefore the overall residence on-street parking stock at night
increases to 627 spaces. The speaker, as of Thursday, the 8th of March 2018, the Delta Carbac Limited have received a total of 531 applications for the residential parking permit for Zone 2. After question 283, the speaker, the residential parking scheme Zone 2 has not commenced yet. Hence, there are no interim measures to consider for a scheme that has not started. Although 551 applications have been received, applications continue to be received, hence we have not been in a position to assess the demand for a scheme until a later date. Mr. Speaker, a vast public consultation exercise was carried out in all aspects of the SPPPP. So vast that members opposite criticized the government from consulting what they thought was too much. Furthermore, the residential parking scheme has undergone even greater consultation with tenant associations and other interested parties when this has been deemed necessary or upon the request of a representative group. Mr. Speaker, is also an SPPPP working group specifically dedicated to the residential parking scheme, which includes technical staff that analyze and recommend improvements to existing and future schemes. I want to emphasize, Mr. Speaker, that these are pilot schemes. An account will be taken of any teething problems we might see.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate with any scheme which is being introduced, there are always found to be teething problems. However, Mr. Speaker, looking from the statistics, there seems to be quite a lot of applications and a lot of vacant parking spaces during the day. Is it a possibility that from the 531 applications received, the people don't actually have their permits issued yet, or is it that the 531 have already been issued with a permit? So walking around the building, you also see a lot of cars passing Zone 2 which are not displaying any permit whatsoever.
Although the scheme went live, the policing of the scheme will not commence until the 3rd of April. Because we've allowed sufficient time for people to get their permits. And one of the reasons why we went out so early was to try to announce and let people know to people that there is a process required to get a permit. You don't apply for a permit today and get it tomorrow. There is a process where they would check, especially if there's any arrears, and having arrears would mean that the applicant wouldn't be able to get a permit in that respect. Now, that is why we have that kind of tax in these public spaces going wild, I think, until the 3rd of April, people can enjoy these public spaces. Whether the religion is wrong or whether or not, this time, that is the time that is required that the law is a time that is necessary, and the PMOs out there will actually take, it's not a fake or damage time, it's information due to the closing window, so you park in a place where you shouldn't be parked, and divide them, so they get used to the idea. Coming to the question of the permits, of the 551 permit applications, or 551 applications that have been received, 260 have been collected. There's still, and for example, 37 permits waiting to be collected at the counter. And there's 226 which are waiting to check with the central arrears unit to see whether they're eligible. Of those 27 applications have already been notified that they can't unless they pay their arrears. So this requires time, and where we would have liked people to have been processing the permits by now, and there was ample time for them to have done so. Given those days, we let it go for our day, and we'll go when we can, and this is what we are faced with at the moment. But I'm sure also that when the 3rd of April does come, people will be looking at the scheme and see how it works, and people will then be part of the scheme. You've also mentioned that there's lots of permits that have been issued. And it's sitting in parking spaces. But there's 2,700 households. So even at 531 applications, it's still quite low in that respect. So take up of the scheme, I'm hoping that there's a lot of parking spaces in town which are private and which are, you know, in corporate, and perhaps people are using them because they find that happening too. And those people that pay for the services they rent or their own, they say, well, why have a permit if I really could use my car parking space? So I'm hoping that will, because if that is right, then, you know, it may be something positive. But I risk it. This is a private thing. I think the comments of people who are maybe unaware, they don't know how it works. I mean, something that you have a manifesto commitment to do is what people want. And this appears in a manifesto in that respect. Now, as a venture capital scheme, the track record is a residential capital scheme for residents. And we see that if you live in an area, you'd be able to benefit from parking in the area. So what happens when you work as well and when you go to the manor or whatever, it's a scheme for residents, and that's something which I think many people are trying to grapple with at the moment. I mean, it was safe, you know, similar issues. A massive uproar, people weren't happy, changes, and people, you know, they like change. And a lot of complaints, a lot of people, and we held our ground, and we need to give it time. And now I'm being set, and being told, look, if the best thing that happens for any reason, we can drive, we can go shopping, we can come back, we don't go into the public space, but really, in all probability, we will find the public space, and we are finding the public space. So it's working, so they're happy. So mainstream and going to is different, I think, completely. And I'm not that into pricing, I don't like, you know, obviously the way the paintings are in public, sort of interest in this. But this needs to be settled. And because otherwise we're just jumping. If we ask them why, I mean, we've had comments of why that's happening in Queensbury, the robot parking is right, but that is still going through, because going to extend all the way to the world. That's okay. So it is in an area which is working close, but they're not for people that live in Queensbury, where we cannot pack their food. They're not for people that want to go and eat there. For that, they have the only house car park, where the term is safe. We've catered to that as well. And that is the only way that you can get people moving from one area to another. That's where cross fertilization occurs. So you can go and visit parents, or go and visit family members. They rather have to be paying to stay in different areas. But people can go on, if you just keep it purely residential, as what we inherited, because that's what the scheme when we took office in 2011, that we had a scheme which was so thick in that respect, that people just couldn't book it, care, couldn't get in, and that's how we've addressed it through turn the state which allows people to move out.
I appreciate the Minister's understanding of in particular. I want to pick up on one of the things that he said, which comes to me often, which is people who complain about the parking spaces in car parks which have been built in and around town, and they see many of the car park spaces empty because people are parking in the street. So would it mean that somebody then who has one of these parking spaces will not be able to apply for a street parking permit? That's one question. And also, with regard to the loading and unloading and these things, I do get a lot of complaints, in particular from parents who need to who can't seek any alternative transport because they need a vehicle to move around to go to take children to their sort of activities and so forth. That they do struggle to find a parking space now with the residential scheme in order to do their activities during the day and in the afternoon. Is this something the government will look into in alleviating the situation for this particular demographic?
Just about 5 minutes to answer the question of the number, is quite a lengthy and preamble to the questions. But the first point is, everyone can apply, or everyone has a right to apply for permits, whether you have a permit or whether you don't. The schemes vary in different locations, so certain conditions that we apply, for example, in Grand Parade and in another state, have not been reproduced in Zone 2. Every area is different, every scheme has to be different, do that because otherwise, I mean, in one area, there's perhaps more than ample parking facilities, and now there's less. So what we have done as far as possible, people who are in possession of a property space have to buy a permit at the next tier level. So there has to be a cost involved because ours is not incentivization. And there's many ways of seeing this carbon. You can say, I give every house one permit. I mean, you've got 2 permits, you can do what you have to do. I mean, it's not our problem, but the way we have decided to do this is allow people to apply for more permits if they want to, but the permits are at a different level. Now, what we hope to see is people will start using those carbon spaces more. And that is when we ask an agent to drive past. An open car parking space which is rented and it's pretty empty. And it's because, unfortunately, we are that way. I think we're all going to include myself in it. If you drive past your house with your 2 children, you're stopping and there's a parking right outside your door, you're not going to go and park, even though you pay rent for a parking space, it's much more convenient. So there is a lot of that does happen, and it's why you sometimes be parked by a car parking space is empty. But with this, it is a financial cost to a permit, it's not a huge amount, but there is a bit of a cost. Then people start thinking twice, say, well, why don't they use my property? Or let's get going, let's give the property to somebody else, let somebody else think about it. And I'll get a permit because I've made some of those funds on street because I've had 19 times. I've had them if you're going to don't use it, but that's the decision that we have to make. As to the second part of the question, the reason we postpone the space is exactly for that, is actually for that purpose, that people that need to move around from one place to another can't find parking, because ideally you say just give people, free parking for maximum, say, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. It's impossible to do. You have to have a PMO at every single place where you find these people with parking and stay there longer, and then when somebody else comes after them, they find there's no space, and what do I do with my cafe? By charging, it's one way, it's not easy to do in that respect as well. And that allows the movement to do this. But when I did say, and I said publicly, these are all part of the existing puzzle. It's still the early days because we've only got the redemption that we inherited, which is the one that is the glass leaves and the green on the north district, which eventually we will review at the end. It's there and it's working in the same way, and it's working differently to what I think. We've got the other major state, and I won't see if we're going to. And then if we're going to, and then if we're going to, and still all the people who talk about it, I was there, then it's when we see how this works and how it's going to interact with each other. And this is a very difficult task. I mean, it's difficult, it's very technical, and it's also a very primary as well. And it is very, very important to stress. It is a private thing. It's something that the government, the opposition, the Norwegian government, will start to do themselves. We just have one scheme. They didn't get past that next one. They couldn't see that scheme progress. But we look at many societies, and many things we have there, where there's a family, and they have encountered all the issues where we have enough. But many of those is also small enough to try to encourage people to use alternative modes of transport. We've got that phase where we just can't continue the way we're going. There's too many cars, we've got past that breakpoint, we just don't have traffic anymore. So, and this is just one other method that we're using to see whether, we can change and instill a different way of thinking. It's difficult. Change is hard, and all I ask is, I predict that between 6 to 8 weeks' time, those patterns which are empty will probably be all full, and they're not full. And in those 3 months are still empty, they're going to review what's going on with the paper and decide whether I just get rid of the pain display and place the pain display there, or whatever needs to do, because we have to make this work for people. And at the moment, it's something which appears that for some aggressive measure, when the time is going to be the best thing that happens.
When I refer to putting my own personal experience in relation to this, perhaps the government might find that helpful, not only mine, but actually people that have come to me with their experiences that coincide with mine. And that is that
Prior to the Zone 2 parking scheme introduced in Queensland, people like me, for example, need to do a school run. There's no other way. I've got to get into my car, I've got to take my son to St. Joseph's, and then from there I've got to come down. I can't from the upper off go to St. Joseph's walking. It's impossible. There are people like that. Even though I accept that there are too many cars in the vehicle. But if I was at 9:10, even 9:15 at Midtown Car Park, I'd always find a car park at Midtown. And about very often, I find myself thinking to myself, actually, the government's done a good job here. And you would find car parking spaces. What now happens as a consequence of the of this scheme is that the people that used to park in Queensway are now parking in Midtown, and you find that, of course, you can't find parking spaces in Midtown. So people like me, and others like me, or others like me, have been very, very severely affected by this Zone 2 parking scheme. Now I wonder whether the government might want to consider a variation of this scheme whereby from, let's say, 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the afternoon, it's open to members of the public to park there. But by 6 in the afternoon, you've got to take it, or 6 or 7, you've got to take it out so that residents then have evening parking spaces. But it really has caused, I say that not wanting to make political capital out of this, I'm giving the Honourable Minister my honest experience about the effect that this has had. It's become a real nightmare for people that unfortunately have to use their car because of where they live, to park in the mornings in the air as a consequence of this. And it is rubbing salt in the wound, so to speak, to be driving the car quickly in the morning to look to your right and to see if it's expensive. All the way along at the Rabbit Stop end, and also in Commonwealth Park. And the Minister said that enforcement will only become effective from the 3rd of April. Well, that would have been helpful if that would have been the information that would have been provided to the public, because then we wouldn't have had as many empty spaces as we've had over the last week or so. And that would have also helped people that really need to have a car. But my question really is, will the government consider a variation of the scheme to at least allow people in Queensland? Queensland, remember, has always traditionally been used by people to park their cars that need to come into town with their cars, during that time period for others to use it as well.
Yes, I agree. I mean, coming down where the staff are living providers, you know, when you have the space, it's a funny thing, because but what happened is, you think, if you go back now, say, a few months ago, and you go past that road, how many parking spaces are available for you to use? None at all. I mean, in fact, they're all taken. And they're taken in effect for, there are many vehicles that have been sold. And you couldn't really, and as well, now it's so different because now the same thing that are parking, now you can't even do that for different reasons. No, yes, but I mean, I just need everyone to realize, I mean, this is a huge challenge, and I'm sure that, you know, when they were doing it on that side, I think they realized how the challenge was, because I looked at how the plan went, and in fact, the GST decided to keep Zone 2.
The specific question that you have been asked. When you consider the question was already open, existing 10 minutes answering is supplementary. And now you seem to be winding yourself up for another 2 minutes. Right? And you keep on talking about it, you start talking about what went on the same debate with the GST, you finish up with a debate. And we are not here to debate, we are here to answer questions. I cannot control the length of your answer, but I must tell you the reason, you know, to answer the specific supplementary that you were asked, which is a variation on the scheme that is large.
Mr. Speaker, not being one, I think, of the city they were both in Parliament and quite enjoying for once, you know, having a bit of a little bit of disaster. And the reference to you was not in a negative light, it was just a statement of fact and saying that I doubt it is an election. But worse because both of you to the end being the hardest one. Now, we've gone through, you know, looking at all different ways of doing this stuff. There's many different options. We've looked at different schemes throughout different cities and all that. And the scheme that you're asking specifically about, we don't think that will work in Zone 2. But it could well work in Zone 3, which is going to be the second answer to why. Because people that live in town work and play in town generally. Okay, so their requirements are for long-term parking, more than they don't get their car to go to work because they probably work and live in the area. Whereas people in the south this week will tend to, you know, be an exodus of cars moving from the south, you know, to work, and maybe seeing that is something which we're considering for zone 3. But we don't believe that there's going to be enough sufficient parking to allow for that sort of thing, but we have thought about it. And as I have reiterated already, this is a pilot scheme. All options will be looked at. But I think we need to let the scheme the way it is breathe a little time. We see how it works. And I think it's very fair to criticize it or to say it's not working. Let it start first. And once it starts, let's then analyze. And this is what we're going to do all about. We review, we look at things, and then we change it if necessary. But we have to give it time. And that is the last I say. And this is our second interest.
So, what about considering something else, which is if somebody in a situation, not in zone 2, but has to use a car for whatever reason, makes that the case, why just simply exclusively allow these parking spaces to be used by zone 2? Because the problem here is that the situation that's being created is that for a class of people, need to use their car for whatever reason, you just can't get around that. You have a situation where there is misery in the mornings in trying to find a parking space. And I mean misery, because it really is misery to be driving and driving and driving around, and even driving all the way to the small boat marina, and to find that even the small boat marina has been taken by a phone, usually now. A third registered license plate, but have been taken from somewhere else and are parking there. And it's just proving to be an impossible situation. And finally, can I ask the Minister, what is Zone 2? What is Zone 2? If you know, or can direct me as to where I can find that information.
Mr. Speaker, a book is actually prepared and also the press and there is a press. And so they made it on that press run. Going to work from wall to wall, from airport gate all the way to airport gate, steps at the wall, at the wall, adjacent to Queensland, and goes all the way up Prince Edward Road, cut back the road, and down, down into the airport gate, which does not include that town, which confines to that area. And as I said earlier, there's 2,700 households in that area, only 505,000 spaces there. And so, logically say, it is not possible to fit 2,700, I think, cars, with one parking into the environment by spaces. So this is why at the moment we're seeing what happens in that respect. But you have it way ahead. It's an impossible task. It's an impossible task because we've got to that point where it's just not possible to sustain the amount of vehicles. Again, you know, things like this past 3 or 4 weeks since it's been started, the weather has been atrocious, so that hasn't helped either. A lot more people use their cars than they would normally. Less motorcycle use as well. A lot of walking, a lot of cycling. It's not just because of a zone 2 has been implemented, that's why life is miserable. I mean, when there's school, there's no traffic, when there's no school, the data is a lovely place to drive around. But the team needs to settle, and then from then on, we will take on the maintenance and create something and to move it to the rest of the intention behind this on the country. Help is what people wanted, and we're starting to see already a flicker of, oh wow, this is working now. I'm starting to notice that, but it will take time. But all else is what it's been said well, and then we will, you know, see what where we go from here.
Peter, can I just ask, is that the eligibility for this for the parking spot just for residences or also for businesses in the main city of Canada?
Peter, residential parking scheme. Residence. It's not a commercial parking scheme, it's not a visitor parking scheme, it's a residence parking scheme. Everyone's ready for residence. Not everyone is a business owner or a user or a commercial agent, but everyone is a resident. So this scheme is to help people who reside in the area have a better chance of finding parking where they live. And how they move from place to place, well, that is dictated on where they use the payment of space that around the area. But it is a residential parking scheme. Having been brought up near the town area, affecting the whole road. My father used to park his car at Grand Parade, and it was just impossible even then to find a parking space on the whole road. We're talking about the 70s and 80s. The Ministry of Land used a scheme whereby loan and mission, you have a less than or an 18% chance of obtaining a parking space if you obtain one of these permits in the upper town. Now, what is the policy objective here? Asking people to buy a permit, which effectively gives them an 18% chance of getting a parking space, no guarantee of a parking space, and yet they're being asked to pay for something that they're effectively not going to be able to get or depend on luck to get. So what really is the type of objective he's trying to achieve in what he really looks at as an impossible task? You're absolutely right. Okay, but if there are only empty parking spaces, so it's 505 empty parking spaces for 2,700 houses. But when you look at the whole parking pool in town, it's not just what's not comprised of only empty parking. There's a lot of parking spaces within thousands of property sector which are rented, owned privately, or within houses. So 2,733 parking spaces exist within town, but they're not on street. They're off street. They increase the road, they don't use them car parks, they miss town, and this is why we look at the amount of applicants at the moment, the numbers are looking quite good because of the 505 spaces, there are, as I mentioned earlier, there are 551 applications that have been denied in some ways in collection, but it's so close to DJ when we start to put the school went live already, it's so close to the 3rd of April, there's just 2,100 applications coming through. So, again, we have to start and see. We have to see how this goes. I think it's too early to actually have an opinion on that.
It's a good time on this, because I think it's important for anybody that is helping the community generally the issue of parking. But why has the government not imposed a condition that if you do have a parking space for your car, which is a private parking space that you own, but you will not get a parking permit. Because that's really the only way you can grab the bill by the home. You can say, well, right, you've got a parking space, well, you park in your parking space. Why leave that parking space empty and park in a roadside parking space that is going to take away the opportunity from somebody else? I can understand that in certain cases, we really did it. Residential parking schemes are good, but the reality is that this involves taking very difficult decisions and having the bravery and the political bravery to take very difficult decisions. It appears to me that if you've got the parking space in Midtown, or you've got two parking spaces in Midtown, you shouldn't be entitled as well to have off-road parking at Queensway, where you can occupy that space and leave your parking space empty.
I'm grateful to the Honourable Gentleman for saying that it does require quite a bit of spiritual bravery, something which is not easy at all. We look at things, as a big picture, and where we're going, and things of the environment, and how this is affecting pollution, and the way we live, and our health, etc., etc. This is one of those measures. Yes, there are many ways of doing this. We could have been a lot more performing. We could have said, okay, you have a parking space, you're not going to go home. But it would be felt that we're going to start it by decentralization in terms of increasing the cost of a parking space. If you're in a profession, for example, a car parking space in India, then you can't get a permit for £60 a year. Your permit will cost £120 a year. And there are families that own 3, 4, and 5 cars, and they double at each car. So, if you're not using a car, you've got a car on the street which you need, or you're waiting for the car to come and never comes, never fits it, then you probably just say, okay, we're going to get into it. So, it's a start to where you want to go. I think what we're doing is brave enough. I think it's going to be reviewed, and it is felt that we need to look at approaches from a different angle of time. But I mean, it's what you're saying is that how perhaps you would have started it, which is appropriate to hear that on your side you probably would have been even more performing in that respect, because you would have had the political gravity to do so. At this point in time, you would have done it because you've had your predecessor will do it. But the elections, stop that from progressing further. But that's the inevitable truth. You say with this other team, you have to go to the whole hog. What you can't do is say with this other team, I say, this is in your face. Let's just pass this thing. I mean, we are confident. We don't look at the whole picture. And you will see, we're not here to make people unhappy, to make people drive issues. But you have said it. If it's great as we can and possible in terms of vehicle energy, then I bet we should. But this is, I think, something that. I mean, we've got all eyes on it, we have teams working with, and we're looking at our comments, so they work by far, we're looking at social media, we're looking at letters, complaints, and also positive comments as well, because there's always two sides to say.
Because that's a convenient place to park here, so I suggest that the house could now adjourn to next Thursday, the 22nd of March, at 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
We're now going to Thursday, the 22nd of March, at 3 in the afternoon.